Station number 16720, Bob Wilson, reel 6.
Mr. Wilson, reel 6. You were saying that you marched to the range, but the officers didn't. How did they get there?
Well, the company commander's here, and the poor old platoon commander's had to. But you always saw the company commander whipping away on his white charger into the dusk. Now, we had to march from Mons Lines to Bellamy to fight our course. And we had no transport those days, you know. Very little. We had a company truck. But that was for the cookhouse people. You know? Now, on your back, you carried your great big haversack, didn't you? Now, that had everything in there. You carried your haversack down by your side. You carried your water bottle at this side. You carried your ammunition, didn't you? You carried your rifle, didn't you? And the top of your pack was strapped to your blanket, wasn't it? Now that's a carry load. And off you went. You didn't march infantry pace on a route march. You sort of cut it down to a sensible route. But you still marched all the way there and all the way back. And that's a carry way from next time you're out Newton Aycliffe, we go to Catrick and go from Catrick to Bellamy. I looked up the map. And you got the Bellamy camp there, and then you fired your course. Then marched all the way back.
What course did you fire?
It was a yearly thing. It was what it was looking for was looking for battalion marksmen. That's what it was looking for. Because, as you well know, later on when the war broke out, the battalion marksmen became snipers.
So what ranges were you firing at?
Well, you fired at everything up to 600. That was your limit, 600 yards, with the Enfield.
Was it an accurate weapon, the Lee Enfield?
I liked it. And of course, they fired the Lewis gun as well, you know, and they fired the machine gun there as well, you know.
Was there some form of stage that you had to pass to get some award for being a marksman?
Oh yes, you bought a cross rifles on you. That was awards. It was a piece of cloth with two brass rifles, and that was stitched on your arm there, and that you're denoting you were a marksman.
Did you get any extra money if you're a marksman? Extra pay?
Not that I know of.
Did you do exercises and manoeuvres with the battalion pre-war?
In war?
No, with Catrick.
Well, not many, really. The most you did then, you know, you used to do your own company manoeuvres. But the biggest thing I can remember at Catrick doing was what was called a force march. You know, that was 20 miles and so many, in such and such a time. Things like that. Now, that was a regular thing of the day, like. Come on there, force march from here to, we'll say, just outside Thirsk or something like that. And that was tough.
Was that at a faster pace than the normal route march?
Oh, that was worse than the route march, that. The route march, he says, I'll tell you, you toned down your pace a bit for a route march, you know. You marched. But a forced march, let's say you ran. So we'll put it that way. You see that. Probably seen on the flicks, have you? Yeah, route march. Forced march, yeah. And they did it in the Falklands, can't remember? In the
Falklands. How did you look after your feet? Or how were they looked after?
The best way you could. Mind your feet was always inspected after a route march. That was the first thing you did when you got back to barracks. You took your boots off and round came your own platoon sergeant and inspected your feet, and anybody who had any blister or anything, you went to the MI room, medical inspection room, it was called, and then they attracted from there on.
Did they put powder in your boots of any kind?
You could do. We used to put soap in, you know. It's a soap on the socks.
And that was protected your feet?
Eased them, yeah. Mm-hmm. Eased them a lot.
Did you do any training with other arms of the services, tanks or anyone of that nature, artillery?
The only thing I... This is further on, you see, than from Catholic, you see. So we are jumping the gun a bit. I did have a little bit of experience with blank gun carriers. And I reckon they are the best team that God sent them. It's a marvellous vehicle. I mean, they hadn't much protection. They had protection, of course. They had... But they were that fast, maneuverable, you know. And a deadly thing, you know, they could take on the normal tank because it could buzz over on its own self, you see.
Had you any vehicle prior to the Bren gun coming out, the Bren carrier coming out?
Well, the nearest we got to the, that was the, we had a little bit of a half-track thing that came out, you know, when that was made. The Germans were the one for the half-tracks, you know. The other one for that track. That's where we got the. That's where the Bren gun came. But that was a marvellous thing. That. Now it's. There is no Bren gun carriers now. They use them scout cars, don't they? No. Well, they have no contact, you know. And of course, they used to fire the Bren gun. Naturally, the Bren gun carriers used to fire the Bren gun.
Did you get any lessons on the battalion or the regiment's history? A constant part of your work?
Not during the war, but in peacetime, yes. I went to school. I had education lessons, you know, when the battalion was formed and things like that. And of course, you got a pamphlet, didn't you, when you joined them? You know, the history of the DLR, you know. And you used to have education lessons, I see in the school room. There was a lecture by the education officer, there was a lesson by the paddy. Right. All sorts of funny people used to come along and waste your time. But there's quite a few of them interesting, you know.
Did it reinforce your esprit de corps to hear about the regimental history?
Did it?
You know, reinforce your esprit de corps, the regiment?
Well, you'd read it, you know. And, yes. Yeah, that's the answer, yes. Well, we weren't a close-knit... Well, you see, I'm talking about the DLI now, you see. And I might be a little bit biased and a little bit... But I'm talking... We weren't a close-knit unit, and it's been proved time and time again. I mean, even the fellow that everybody hates, Montgomery, said that. Yeah.
What was the role of the padre in the unit?
God bless his cotton circle. It was a man mountain danger on the padre, you know. He was here, there and everywhere, you know. It didn't matter whether it was front line or back line, you know. The padre. And of course, he's given where he could have been as frightened as anybody else, you know, but he's still giving words of comfort to people. And asking them any messages you want to get home, he got them home. Didn't matter, I don't know how, but he got them home. Yes, and that's it.
Very approachable. You could approach him.
Any time of day, night, didn't matter when. If the shells were flying down, you could approach him. If the sun was shining, you could approach him. Didn't make any difference to him.
You mentioned the sport and the football. How good was the battalion team in Catrick time?
In Catrick time, very good. And in India, you know, we're the only battalion that won the Lahore Trump Cup 3 years in a row. And that's in the battalion mess now. We kept that. The biggest cup in the world, you know. Lahore Trades Cup. The battalion, yes, very good at Catley, but much better in India. We're definitely the champs of India, definitely.
What did you do for leisure time at Catley?
Maybe it's going down to... There wasn't much you could do, you know, really. go down to the Naffy, have a game of dominoes, go down to the billiard room, have a game of snooker or billiards. And you had to be on your best behaviour, you went down there, you know. You had no dirty fingernails or anything like, oh, you've never seen anything like it. You know? You could eat your dinner off the floor in the billiard room. You could eat your dinner off it. Beautiful it was. You weren't allowed to lean on the table, you know, anything like that. Lance Corporal Fitzgerald, I always remember him at Catwick. I never forget him. He was in charge of the billiard table. And mine, you know, when you hear it, says, it's just like a billiard table. This was beautiful. Shiny, you know, not a mark on it, you know. And all the cues in the correct places and everything. Marvellous it was. But you see, that cost you money because you had to pay, you see. You had to pay.
Was there a Garrison Theatre or cinema?
Garrison Cinema, not far from us, as a matter of fact. Not far from outside Mons Lands. Well, Mons Lands is not there now, you know. And there was a whole lot of shops and the cinema.
Dancing, dance halls? I know you didn't dance.
But oh, well, I didn't dance, but there used to be dances in Catwick, you see, there used to be dances there, but it didn't bother me, you see, I wasn't interested in that.
How did the leave work? How often did you get leave in these early days?
Well, those days you're allowed a month a year. I think I'm right, 28 days a year. So you could use it as you wish.
You could choose your time, could you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you want your 28 days and it didn't interfere with the company at the battalion, you got it. But they didn't haggle about things like that. I must give them that. But you generally used to take about a week every quarter sort of thing, you know. Used to keep you probably a good week for Christmas, you know, a day before Christmas, like, and things like that.
Do you recall your first Christmas with the battalion?
Did I?
Recall your first Christmas?
Well, as I told you, I joined up in April 1933, you see. But I was home for Christmas. And then I didn't see another Christmas at home for about 7 years, you see, so. And I don't care who you are. Whenever things like that come round, Christmas especially, you automatically switch to home, you know. Automatically. Yeah, you've made your bed, haven't you? Lie in it.
How long were you at Catwick?
Well, we weren't long at Catwick because we moved to Blackdown, you see.
Do you know what date that would be?
I was in Blackdown from about May 34 to February 35. From February 35 to February 37, I was in India.
We'll come to that in just a moment.
Oh, sorry.
Blackdown, what was it like down there?
We're in the wilds. It is a wild, you know, it's a Dartmoor type place. So there was nothing there. That's all I can. And I wasn't there long enough to worry about it.
Were you on draft or something down there? Was it a transit camp?
Well, the battalion moved down there, you see, from Catwick. They moved down there.
What were you doing there?
Just battalion duties. Battalion duties.
The usual thing that you'd done, Catwick.
Then the draft came out, as it says, on the battalion orders. The following proceed and join the battalion in India.
Which battalion was in India?
Second.
And this would be February.
And we left Blackdown on the 7th of February, 1935.
How did you feel when you saw your name down to go abroad. What were you feeling?
I was all right. I didn't mind. I told my mother, I said, it may be a couple of weeks before I'll see him. I'm off to India.
You'd been given embarkation leave, had you?
Good embarkation leave. 7 days.
How did she feel about you going away for so long?
She has same thing's been telling us all the other. Just do as you're told. And you can't do any wrong. Well, as I say, we were blacked down. We left roughly February 35 and landed in India. And I was there until February 37.
What are your memories of the journey?
Well, the journey was beautiful. We were on a submarine called the Troop Ship Navassa. That's what it was called. Anybody called it. Any time there was a bit of a wave, went underneath and come up the other side. A terrible ship. Now, that ship now is still in service, but it's being fitted with stabilizers now, and it's a ship that takes school children from here to there to there to here. And they reckon it's marvellous now. But that's the ship we went abroad on the HMS Submarine Navassa.
What was life like on the boat?
All right, it was. There was nothing to do except you come back for your pickets again. Now there was no guards in there, but from 10 o'clock at night till 6 o'clock in the morning, there was pickets on down in the bowels of the ship. You know, guarding the water taps. That's all, you know. And otherwise, after you've done your lifeboat drill in the morning, you roll call in the morning, and you roll call at night. Your time is yours to do what you want, gamble, sleep, read. Of course, we had no music centres in India, as you see, so we had none of that. But to do what, and of course, the good thing was, with the battalion going overseas, the band went overseas, didn't it? And they were there to give you concerts. Well, you see, they played 75% for the officers. You know, classical stuff. Well, you know, the ordinary soldier doesn't like classical stuff, does he? Likes the playing this or something like that. Well, not sure what he realised, eh? But no. But never mind. They did the best. Bless them.
You mentioned gambling again there. Was it a bit free and easy on the boat for gambling? You were allowed to do it?
No, you're not allowed to gamble in the army. You should play for matchsticks. Because everybody knew what a matchstick was. At the end of the day, if you were 40 matchsticks down, well, you owed 40 pence, didn't you? But still, there was no money on the table. As long as there was no money shown, you couldn't do anything about it because you weren't gambling. Sometimes you used to have one man used to write down the book, you see. But there was never no money. If you put money on the table, you'd have it.
So it must have been quite boring journey then, if you...
Well, I didn't find it. I thought enjoyable, you see. Really enjoyable. There's another thing to talk about. Now, on the bus, the officers could go to a film show, couldn't they? We couldn't. And I didn't see any reason why we couldn't. Because there were 600 of us, wasn't there? That's why.
Did this cause any kind of discontent, seeing what the officers could do that you
just
couldn't do?
Just the usual swear words, you know. The usual swear words. But that was discipline again, you see. You didn't say it outright. But you couldn't say it outright, would you? Thought a lot. You had a good ride, I think.
Was it crowded, the boat? Uncomfortable?
No. I mean, when you got down at night time, you saw, we'll say, 300 hammocks slung up there, you know. Sometimes the smell was a bit awful and sweaty feet and things like that. But no, it was quite comfortable. And if you wanted, you could sleep on deck.
Right? Food, was it good?
Wholesome.
Not a great change from what you had?
No, not a great change. No. And of course, for the bloke who, as I keep harping on about this, playing sport. That's the way I had to have the group in there. And I didn't mind Kuko's fatigues at all, you know. Because you used to go to Kuko's, you know, and peel a few spoons. But you got an extra meal, didn't you? And you always came home, you know, after you finished, after tea, like, with a great big butty bacon sandwich, you know. I didn't mind that at all.
And pickets were the only duties you did on board the ship?
Duties? Just pickets.
Who looked after you on the ship? Obviously the officers didn't. They would be in their own end, no doubt.
Oh, the officers were responsible for your welfare. They had to see that you were all right. Because they had to see that you did as the captain said you did. Not as they said, as the captain said.
The ship's captain.
That's the ship. The ship's captain said, I want lifeboat drill at 2 o'clock in the morning. But there's nobody can do anything about it. He never did, of course, because he had to get up there. But they had no say on board. He was the chief.
And was it basically the task of the NCO still to do the looking after, really?
Yes.
How long did the journey take?
6 weeks.
No problems with people getting bored and being a bit fratchy?
We lost one man.
How's that?
I don't know. Private Scott. Never knew on that, I reckon. He didn't drink. I know he didn't drink. We never know. There's a lot of people thought he was pushed overboard. Because he was in the regiment and police, you see. But he wasn't a bad regiment policeman, so I couldn't understand, but he was lost overboard. In the Red Sea.
Was there an inquiry?
Oh, yes. I went up and there was an inquiry on the boat. And then there was an inquiry in the battalion. And there was an inquiry in England. I don't know.
Were your own regimental police disliked in general?
SWINEs were. They were worse than the regimental police. They were worse than the military police.
And they were lads out of your own battalion.
And they were, yeah. That word was law, that. Word was law. We had a sergeant Hales. I'll probably tell you about him when I come to the battalion in Wuppertal. The day he was proposed on. And let's say, do you know anything about wrestling? No. Well, he was like Big Daddy. Do you know, can you remember him? And he used to pump you like that, you know, with his tummy, you know. He used to go flying, you know. Right. Heels.
What was it that made them so much worse than the military police? Was it the way they were told to do their job?
The way you see it, the focus was on them, wasn't it? So that there was no upheaval within the barracks. The military place outside was in the town centre, so. But everything that happened in the battalion itself was a slur against, we'll say, the CO. And it was their job, the regimental police, to say that nothing did happen. And they were always on the prowl, you know. Always. And there was only 12 of them, you know. And that would do 24 hours, you know, sort of thing. They were always there. So and they were prowling all over the ship, you know. Gamblers and all sorts of drunks coming out the canteen, oh, dearie. But they had a good idea, the regimental police. They used to chuck them in the cell overnight and leave them there and then chuck them out in the morning.
Were they volunteers or selected?
Well, they weren't volunteers in the first place. You know, come on, battalion, you know, the vacancy of a regimental policeman, you see, and people used to put in for it. Of course, it was a cushy number, really. They didn't know how to put that. They had to carry a rifle over with them, or you know, all that. You know, had to buy gloves and direct the traffic. Yeah, I think they're the most... what can I say? Worst life people in the British Army, in any battalion, they're regimental police. They're worse than the military police.
What was their role, I know it's jumping in a bit, but what was their role in an action situation?
In an
action situation, when you came to action. Warfare, what was the role of the of the regimental police?
Well, then the regimental police became sort of traffic directors, you know, and things like that.
They weren't behind the...
Oh, no. They were fair, you know, when they used to ride ahead, you know, and... We would have been planted out and used to come to a crossroads. There'd be a copper there, you see, and we had to round to the right or round to the left, whatever.
Right, if we go back to the ship now, you say that it was not too bad, a situation.
No, not too bad at all. And you had plenty of grub there, because a lot of people seasick, wasn't there?
Do you remember the places you called at on the way out?
Yes, we... you only stopped at the inn. That's all we stopped at. No more, didn't stop at Gibraltar, Malta, or anything like that, just at the inn. Then from the inn through the Suez Canal on to Bombay.
You didn't pick anyone else up on the route out?
No. Didn't drop anybody off. Except poor Scotty. But that was in the Red Sea.
Was the 1st Battalion taking over completely from the 2nd, who were already out there?
No, it was... it was a draft from this battalion going out to build the battalion up, see? And that battalion in... No, let's get this straight, sorry. Right. Yeah, that's right. They're going to build that battalion up to full strength, you see, while it was in India.
You reached India, what are your first impressions of India, getting there?
Well, let's put it this way, I would never live there. It's filthy. And all you see is beggars. From one corner of the street to the next corner of the street. And they're all shouting for money. No, I have no time for it. Sorry, it's not my country at all. Might be wrong, but no.
Where did you land?
Bombay. And when we went to a place called Kalava Barracks. Hey, I'm not bad with my memory, am I? Went to Kalava Barracks. And then we were staying at Kalava. Now, that was lovely, because Kalava Barracks was on the seafront. So you got all the sea breezes coming in. And it was cool and beautiful, Kalava. And then Air Company got shunted up to a place called Doolally. Well, everybody knows what the Doolally Tap is, round the twist. Well, that was a proper station around it. Right in the middle of nowhere. 110 miles from Bombay, and it took a 24 hours by train. Do you remember about that? That's like British Rail, isn't it?
Do you remember the train journey?
Oh, never forget it. And of course, corrugated seats, hadn't we? Right. It was a proper troop train, plus a couple of carriages for civilians, you see. To pay for it, you see. Or books here, probably. But we landed in Doolally and we stopped there.
Had your uniform changed when you'd got to India? You wouldn't be wearing the British...
We still wear the same sort of thing, yeah.
It wasn't khaki drill, anything like that.
Oh, yes. You went into tropical gear then. Tropical gear, yeah.
What did that...
Well, that was your bush jacket, shorts, nighttime, long trousers. Right? And eventually we got posh and got these proper desert boots. You know, they were lovely to walk in.
How long were you at... The first camp, what did you say it was?
Kalaba. About 6 months.
What were you doing there?
Just battalion duties. as them stupid guards that I was telling you about, you know, playing up and down there, nobody looking at you, and not being able to guard anything if anything happened. Just suppose there was a bit of a riot, now what good would you be? Starched up to the collar there, you had to keep your neck up as it would stick in your throat, you know. That's all, battalion duties.
You didn't get involved in any
unrest? No riots or anything like that, no.